At the end of your life, what will be your legacy? What will you leave behind for future generations? For the world, join the world messenger, Isabella Lundberg. Each week as she brings you a new distinguished guest from the business, sports, or entertainment world to share their success, their struggles, and their lessons. They will share their insights into current hot topics that affect everyone. Isabella facilitates an intimate, vulnerable environment to find the true value of humanity and real leadership. Are you ready for your legacy? The legacy that matters?
If you had a chance and opportunity to talk to not only a super savvy entrepreneur who is innovating and transforming so many industries with SaaS products that leverage artificial intelligence, natural language processing, robotic process automation, automatically reading and completing tasks associated with corporate documents, any documents, and the best part, in any language, what would you ask him? Who is also, in addition to contributing to Business Council of Forbes, one of my fellow members, and is young, savvy entrepreneur. Without further ado, let me introduce you to Austin Ambrosi. He is leveraging this with two amazing companies, which I will let him to shed some light about in a second. Hi, Austin. How are you?
I'm great, Isabel. Thank you very much for having me on.
Absolutely. I'm absolutely thrilled and geeked on what you guys are doing. But first of all, before we go into all these amazing solutions and everything that obviously you are able to accomplish in such a short period of time, do you mind sharing a little bit about your background? Where did you grow up, Austin, and how did you get into tech?
So I grew up in a small town in Missouri, St. Joseph, Missouri, about 45 minutes north of Kansas City. I grew up in a one-bedroom house with a single mother. I didn't really have any upbringing around technology. I went to the University of Missouri, Columbia, Mizzou, and got my degree, my undergraduate degree in economics. And that is what kind of, I had kind of always wanted to be an entrepreneur. My father was an entrepreneur. I started spending more time with him about eight or nine years old. My father was always an entrepreneur, and I kind of just learned that I saw a lot of benefits to that lifestyle, and it sort of kind of came naturally to me. I started making money in high school cutting grass, and started a marketing company and while I was in college, and some other things like that. Got into trading cryptocurrency. I kind of bounced around to from a lot of different areas, trying to figure out where I wanted to be, where I wanted to be an entrepreneur. And had made a lot of mistakes. went down some roads that I realized that, could I find success there? Maybe, but is it what I wanted to do? Is it what I was most apt to do? That sort of thing. And whenever COVID hit, I kind of had a moment where I could evaluate, is digital marketing what I want to do for the rest of my life? And it's like, well, no, not really. I wasn't very passionate about it. I like it. But I was becoming very infatuated with tech at the time. My business partner, Isaac, and I, we were automating a lot of our internal processes at that marketing company. And we noticed that we were getting, the people that we were talking to, they were more interested in we would casually talk about the things that we were automating within our own company, and they were more interested in that than they were the marketing that we were selling. And it was like, hey, we like this more. We seem to be good at it, and people are more interested in it. Why don't we take this opportunity where, there's a lull in the market because of COVID and whatnot, and we're still young enough to make this pivot and kind of go all in on this direction. And so that's what we did in 2020. We started a company called Autonomy. And the focus of it, the mission of the company, was sort of just what the name says, is to give autonomy to organizations that were being bogged down by heavy, repetitive, manual, tedious processes that nobody really wanted to do. And this was before the big boom in AI happened. AI has been progressing gradually for, decades, but, obviously the ChatGPT moment kind of really started the snowball effect. And luckily we were just positioned at the right place at the right time to, get into the industry, kind of, make some mistakes, break some things before things really started kind of taking off, to where we were very up to speed on all the cutting edge stuff before, you know, before stuff started getting really crazy, and we were able to just sort of kind of ride that wave. That's led to a lot of things that I would have never foreseen, being on this podcast included. But the kind of the mission of the company was, it was a service-based company that we wanted to find mid-market companies that were struggling to scale, you know, build custom tailored solutions to automate whatever processes were functioning as bottlenecks for them, and then do so for very thin margins up front, so long as we believed that it was something that we could repackage and resell to other incumbents of the same industry. So sort of start as a service company and scale as a product company. And that was, we had several products that did all right for a while. And then we built an intelligent document processor that would later become our subsidiary company, Doxy. And what Doxy, you know, Doxy is our premier flagship product. And the mission of Doxy is to put all the paperwork on autopilot. So the tagline on the website is, you know, it's, it might take a human 5 minutes to read through one corporate document and complete a task, but Doxy can do over 100,000 in that same 5 minutes.
Oh my God. Oh my God. That is insane. Let's sink in. Takes a 5 minutes to process over 100,000 documents.
And honestly, just for anybody listening that is really interested in tech, it's like, theoretically, we could scale that up infinitely. That number could be 500,000, could be a million. Really, that we could build the infrastructure to handle realistically any volume that we needed to. Just the 100,000 number kind of pops the most from a marketing perspective, my background in marketing, Sean.
But that's amazing. Again, just like, as you said, the magnitude, the speed, but then something amazing is also happening. As both of us know, it's key element for all of that. Besides speed, it's a magic word of accuracy. Do you mind sharing a little bit about that?
Yeah, so one of the, that's our biggest differentiator is the accuracy rates that we're able to achieve. You know, a lot of people ask me, you know, what's the difference between this and ChatGPT? Why wouldn't I use that? And the most simple way that I can explain it is that GPT is a floodlight and Doxy is a laser pointer. So there's a lot of things, there's many, many things that ChatGPT can do that Doxy cannot do. You know, Doxy's not going to be able to have a conversation with you and talk to you about the history of the Civil War or anything like that. But the things that Doxy does focus on, it does very, very well. And one of those things is hitting above human level accuracy rates. So, you know, some smaller companies, they might be able to make an 80 or 90% accuracy rate work, or maybe even 95% work. But you start talking about these major, you know, Fortune 500 companies or these government contracts where the stakes are so high, the 95% doesn't cut it. 96% doesn't cut it. These entities need 98, 99% accuracy with every single use case. And that's one of the areas where we stand out, is we're able to deliver accuracy rates on the messiest of documents. So there's people that can deliver, you know, 100% accuracy rates on driver's licenses and things like that. And we can do that too. But when you start talking about, you know, a 300 page legal contract with, you know, that's long form paragraphs, there's some charts here on this page, that, you know, diagrams here on this page, it becomes a lot more tricky, a lot trickier to hit these above human level accuracy rates. And that's one of the areas where we've put a lot of focus and where our quality really shines.
It's so interesting understanding how many companies exist, right? And how many of them have all kinds of claims, but question is how well they can do. And I can agree how important it is, the precision and accuracy of documentation, because obviously that data is going to be crucial, not only for decision making, but also for any enterprise, because they're going to be looking at it, obviously leveraging and utilizing, and it's going to impact not only the companies, but also their vendors, their clients, and it's going to create an outstanding, obviously, ripple effect as a result of it, right?
Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of, you know, everybody's, it's no secret that data is the new oil. Everybody knows that. Everybody knows the importance of storing their data and organizing their data. But it's like, you know, even some of the most advanced companies in the world, they have, you know, troves and troves of data. It's like they're storing everything, but they aren't making use of it. They don't have a way of intelligently navigating that document to get insights that they need and put that data to use. So it's like they're sitting on a gold mine of value that they just don't even have unlocked. It's like, it's the equivalent of having a bunch of money in a safe and not ever being able to take it out and spend it. Whereas if you have a tool that can, you know, read millions of documents and have that knowledge base and perfect memory and, you know, quickly navigate that and extract the value and apply it in the context that it's needed, then it's a complete game changer. It's night and day difference.
And what's so interesting is that so many companies are still on the fence. They don't even know what to do internally with their own companies and their people, let alone how they can innovate and transform for their clients in terms of services. And things are getting more competitive than ever before. And I'm curious, how are you positioning to really tackle this on the global scale?
Well, we've been refining the product for a while. We focused a lot more on quality than marketing for a while, and we're at the point now where we're kind of ready to switch gears. And we know that if, as long as we show up and deliver the quality in the most important moments, then the marketing and the business development will take care of itself. Word of mouth will spread. If you build a great product, people will talk about it, and other people will use it. And that's something that I think has always been true and always will be true. So in terms of kind of what we're doing on like the international stage, we're in the process. I got to be careful about what I say, but we're in the process of doing a very large deal for the Ministry of Justice of Saudi Arabia. They have, you know, hundreds of millions of pages worth of historical records that they are looking to process. And so, you know, one of the benefits of using a solution like Doxy is consistency, right? Because you don't have, you know, one person might have one error rate and this other person might have a different error rate, or maybe somebody goes on vacation, or people have different styles. You know what I mean? You get the consistency of a solution, but something else that isn't discussing as much is the speed, where, you know, the deal that we're working on in Saudi Arabia, it's like they have a system that is working. They have 1,000 people doing this whole operation manually, you know, page by page. And it is very, you know, intensive and intricate, but it works, right? And so they have the quality and the accuracy rates that they're looking for. Their main incentive is speed, where it's like, if they keep going, they've been working on this for 2 years. And if they keep going at the rate they're going, it's going to take them about another 2 years to finish. So the value for Doxy for them is not so much the accuracy rates. It's the fact that they can save 2 years. They can be done tomorrow. You know what I mean? Whenever we get the deal done, of course. But so it's like, it's so interesting to me, because I've noticed that like different people in different parts of the world have different incentives. And that's something that is, you know, creating so many opportunities for us and letting us learn so many things, where it's like, you know, these people care about accuracy. These people care about speed. Some people care about, you know, data security and the method of deployment. Can it be hosted on their cloud, and these different sort of things? So we're really, we've been kind of working in stealth mode for a while, and now we're kind of ready to step on the global stage. We're obviously wanting to work with you with sort of these initiatives with the Air Force and, you know, doing the deals in Saudi Arabia. And there's some other international things that we have in the works that are a bit more early stages, so I'll wait to talk about those. But we're looking to make a splash here, and you know, Doxy isn't a household name right now, but I genuinely, at the bottom of my heart, believe that it will be.
I love how you are able to basically disrupt any industry, anybody that has any paper trail or any electronic trail and any data, which obviously is applicable in so many different environments. But what I'm learning, and if you don't mind highlighting this, you are able to leverage linguistically in so many different languages, which, you know, it's not just anymore just the English, right? But also, to my understanding, very complex, even handwritten documents and old archives and old types of writing styles, which is mind-boggling. Can you please share a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's something that we get asked about a lot, because it's really a testament to the new generation of technologists, because conventional software wisdom would say that if somebody is doing, if somebody is coming to you with a product and they say you can do any language, you can do any document, you can do any industry, then they're probably not very great or exceptional at any of those things, right? Because conventional wisdom is if you don't want to be a mile wide and an inch deep is the saying, right? So it's so fascinating for me to watch that conventional wisdom fall apart here, because for us, in this industry, the story has been, a reduction in training data. So people are trying to create templates of documents, let us see a bunch of examples of a given document, and then we'll kind of have an idea of like the different like variations and things like that. And so by that wisdom, if you're building a template, then yes, you should specialize in one use case in one industry in one niche sector. But the thing is the more you rely on templates, the less likely a large company or a large government entity is going to be able to use your solution. It's really ironic, because it's one of the few areas in tech where the bigger you are, the less likely or less able you are to use the cutting edge stuff. Because if you're using a template, the more paperwork you have, the more likely you are going to come across something that falls outside of the realm of the template that you've mapped for. And then the solution isn't going to work and the whole operation comes to a halt. It's better as if it was never there at all. So what we are doing differently is we are focusing 100% on the language. We are teaching a machine the mechanics of language and how language functions. And because of that, we're able to, one, deploy with way less training data. And two, we're able to process so many different types of documents because we don't care about how it's structured. We don't care about the information is at on the page. If the machine can read, if the machine can discern meaning from text from that it is given, then it doesn't matter where that text is at on the paper or how it's arranged. It'll be able to cognitively understand the document the same way that a human being would. And that's always been the goal of software, is reducing the cognitive load of a human. So it's like, if you have a document processor that specializes in one document type, it's probably because they aren't focusing on the language. They're focusing on the topology of that one document type versus us. The better that you understand the language, the fact that we can do different industries, we can do different languages, we can do these different styles and whatnot, that's evidence of the fact that we have hit the nail on the head with the core metric that matters, which is teaching a machine how language functions. And so it's just interesting watching the conventional like SaaS model get flipped on its head, where the people that can really do it can do it all.
It's so fascinating to me to see how quickly we got here, right? And how just creates endless possibilities. And as a result, we have choices and decisions to make, and how we can help others to navigate complexities and making smart choices and decisions. And ultimately, obviously, changing the landscape. How is business going to be done? So I'm curious, what do you see coming down the road as a result of all these amazing innovative solutions?
I love that you asked that, because it's like, part of being a founder is being future oriented in a way, seeing where you think things are going and trying to build something to position yourself to be in the right place once things arrive there. And it's like, where we're at now is just the beginning. It's automating paperwork. I don't even think that we have the words to do the value proposition justice yet, because where this company is going, we're very young, very early in this process. And it's like, where we're going is to the point where we're going to the point where someone will be able to speak to a computer and tell the computer what the job is, and the computer's just going to do it. And it sounds like something out of a fairy tale. It sounds like a sci-fi movie. It's like, we're literally the ones building that. So I see it, day in, day out. And I know like kind of where we're at in that process. And I see it kind of being brought about and coming to fruition. And so, I see it happening. But it's like, that's what I think is going to happen. We're moving towards a world where we don't have to spend as much time doing the jobs that we don't want to do. And we have a lot more time to spend on the things that we would like to do. So, right now Doxy needs me and my team to kind of tell it what to do and how to, we have to kind of translate between the clients and the technology. But that's where it's really coming, is the two sides converging to the point where we can literally, give somebody access to Doxy, and Doxy's going to be able to fill in the gaps and understand the things that it doesn't know and ask the questions it needs to ask to be able to autonomously do entire workflows. So we're we're, you know, software for the last 25 years has been tools, right? And now we are on the cusp of what are going to be digital employees, which is a totally different paradigm. It's very exciting.
Yes, it is. And I love what you said, that we can now pick and choose to do what we love, what we're good about, which is focusing on knowledge, focusing on innovation and creativity instead of those manual type of tasks or tasks that are not necessarily liked as much by anyone. And which brings another question. It's so much fear out there, Austin, that with these types of innovative solutions like yours and what you're able to do with your business partner, Isaac, and create with Doxy, that's going to take so many jobs away. Do you mind addressing that stigma? And then also one of the examples where you were talking about productivity with a team that you already see in huge differentiator, what they used to do before and after, and what they can focus more of as a result of it.
Yeah. The one of our biggest use cases has been compliance paperwork. And the reason for that is because nobody wants to do it. It's everybody is very worried about AI taking jobs and whatnot. We don't talk about the jobs that nobody wants to do. One client comes to mind that they have to hire somebody, a new person for this role every 3 or 4 months, because it's the job that nobody at the company wants to do. So they give that job to the new hires, the kids fresh out of college that are all bright eyed and bushy tailed and whatnot. And they come in and they say, hey, here, you're going to pay your dues, right? Because that was the old model, and the old way of doing things was that people would show up at a company. You'd do the stuff that nobody else wanted to do. You'd serve your time and slowly climb the corporate ladder over the course of your career. Then the internet came now and we became a very hyper-connected world. And so now there's way more opportunities for everybody. There's way more applicants, but there's way more opportunities for those applicants. So you get a kid fresh out of college, kid goes in there, they're reading just the driest, mind-numbing compliance paperwork. They don't feel inspired. This isn't what they thought they were going to college for. This isn't what they thought the working world was like, all these things. And then they get burnt out and they leave for a different job opportunity that they got from the internet. 3 or 4 months in. And so not only is it hard for them, not only are we saving, these undergraduate kids, I mean, this is just an example, but not only are we saving these young people that don't want to do the jobs, but what about the more senior people that are having to repeat the process of onboarding someone new every 3 or 4 months for this position that clearly nobody wants to do? So that's an example of where I think kind of the fear around the jobs being taken away is out of proportion, and it isn't being viewed correctly. Another area, because it's not just the jobs that we don't like to do, because the next thing is like, well, what about the jobs that we do like doing? What about creativity and art and all these things? And like, what happens when, and I have a pretty substantial following on TikTok, 180,000 followers. And I know some other creators that are, way bigger than I am. And they've kind of been talking to me because they know that I'm in this world. And they're like, well, what happens when all of the videos on TikTok are getting made by AI, and content creators and artists, can't even get any attention or make a living anymore? And I'm like, listen, the only way that happens is if the machines surpass us in creativity, because the algorithms are so good at showing people what they want to see that those algorithms are only going to get better. So the only way that we get this flood of content and creativity from the machines that drowns out humans is if that content and creativity is better. It's like the only way that you stop hearing songs from your favorite artists is if you start hearing songs that you like more, or if you start seeing videos that you like more. And it's like, is that really a bad thing for us to, you know what I mean? I don't know. It's going to be different. It's going to be a different world entirely. And I'm not, I would be doing a disservice to people if I said that it won't be. But I genuinely believe that much like other technological revolutions, it's going to be for the better. It's going to be a net positive for humanity. And there's going to be some people that struggle to adapt to the new times, like there always has been. And then there's going to be the majority that do. And they it's going to be different, and it's going to be strange. And that's life. And that's what makes it so exciting from my perspective.
Thank you for sharing that. And I'm curious now, because obviously that brings another point. What do you see as some of the risk and some of the issues? Because we're seeing different patterns, obviously, and different expectations, but then also risk that a lot of times innovators, maybe don't necessarily foresee, and then someone like you who is young but very business savvy and also has that innovative mindset, it's a great to kind of look at things through a holistic lens and really shed some lights on that as well.
I think the biggest risks are trying or come from trying to stifle the innovation, honestly. And it's a weird thing for me to say, because I have, you know, obviously, just for the interest of transparency, I have a financial incentive for us to not stifle that innovation. But I'm saying, even free of my bias, I genuinely believe that the biggest risks of this movement come from trying to stifle innovation, because the genie's already out of the bottle. There are people that you've never heard of that aren't with any companies that are in, you know, that are in a basement somewhere working on something that could be completely novel. That could be, something that has never been done before in this space. And that, whenever we're talking about a technology as powerful as artificial intelligence, that's not what you want. You want the tip of the spear to be on the biggest stages. You want it to have scrutiny. You want open source, and you want a lot of people having conversations about it and trying to see, where the limits can be stretched. Because what you don't want is you don't want an independent rogue actor to accidentally be the one to, you know, cross the threshold into making something that is truly, you know, super intelligent. Because there are people that have very corrosive ideals about kind of humanity and various values, and I won't get into all that. But it's powerful technology, and so much of the same way that we want to know who owns all of the nuclear weapons in the world, we want to know who owns the most powerful AI. And so long as we have that dialogue and we don't delude ourselves into thinking that we can suppress it and whatnot, you know, it's like, no, we need to acknowledge this is here now, and we need to talk about it, and we need to be open with it. And it needs to be in, you know, the governments need to be involved in it. There needs to be, you know, ethical groups. There needs to be policy around it. We can't get rid of it. So we need to talk about how we are going to integrate it.
Again, I love from such a young entrepreneur that is so conscientious and future focused, also that wants to preserve and do leverage technology for good, which is kudo again to you and Isaac. But I also wanted to highlight here on the Legacy Leader Show for everybody watching and listening, that it is possible again to navigate, innovate, and in the same time, create a financially strong, sustainable environment for all companies to thrive as well their people, because we have so many problems to solve here. And you're definitely tackling some of the most complex and complicated and ones that truly drag everybody and that often get neglected, and they can be extremely costly.
Absolutely. Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
So with that in mind, Austin, obviously you're already leading with your legacy. You're already carving an amazing footprint for yourself and with what you are putting out and what you're doing in this chapter of your life. But I'm curious, what would you like to be known for with everything that is unfolding and wanted to be remembered for as your legacy?
That's a good question. I think, and I'm still workshopping it, and I imagine that it might change over the years. I had my 29th birthday two weeks ago, so I don't know, part of me feels as though it might be a bit early for me to be thinking about legacy, but I guess now is as good a time as any, especially when, you know, I'm starting to have these conversations that are getting increasingly important. I think that what I want to be known for is helping people with the reduction of suffering. And I think that can take a lot of different forms, but I think that's what it means to create value. And I think that's the most noble and valuable thing that, and nobility aside, I think it's the most valuable thing that somebody could ascribe to become, is somebody that helps others get rid of suffering. And so if it's, I help you get rid of this job that you don't like, or I help you get rid of these operational costs that you don't like, or, you know, my content on TikTok is more mental health stuff. So it's like, you know, if I help you get rid of this emotional problem in every area of my life, I think that that's what it means to produce value, is to help others reduce their suffering, to help people get rid of their problems. I personally have found in my own life that it's much better to focus on the reduction of suffering than it is to chase some sort of ideal or chase even happiness, as it were. I think that happiness is a proxy for the reduction of suffering. So we shouldn't be focusing on the carrot. We should be focusing on getting rid of the sticks. That's what I think.
So wise and very inaugural. And I'm sure that you are not only already obviously doing that, but you can achieve in such a larger scale, because as things are unfolding, as they say, future will tell, but it's so great when you are doing this from the right reason. So if we look back now and everything where you arrived today, what would be one single message for all of those executives, leaders that are still on fence or trying to make a decision or wrap their head around what's available under fingerprints right now, and how much solutions can be solved just with leveraging Doxy and what you and Isaac created? What message would be for them?
Well, I don't even think that I want to be self-promotional in the sense of leaving a message about my company specifically. The message that I'll leave is going to be about the AI sector at large. And that message is, there's a lot of noise right now, but we've reached a very interesting point in time. I posted about this in the Forbes group the other day. With other emerging technologies that I've studied, there seems to be a trend where, you know, there's the early adopters, and then you reach the point where there's saturation, right? And then there's sort of this like leveling out process, and we've kind of start off too low, and then the enthusiasm is too high, and then you kind of find yourself in this equilibrium where, you know, realistic expectations are set, the hype and the vaporware, the snake oil, all that's been exposed, and you kind of have, you know, realistic expectations, and you kind of go onwards. So we've undoubtedly reached the point in the AI industry of saturation, right? The ChatGPT moment has happened. Everybody knows that what's going on. And so now there's a lot of noise, and it's kind of hard to cut through the noise. And so I think that there are a lot of leaders of these Fortune 500 companies, these government agencies, a lot of people with a lot of responsibility, a lot of, you know what I mean? There's a lot of consequences for their actions. And so these people are not quick to jump in at the first pitch that's given to them, and rightfully so. It's why they are where they are. But I think that there are a lot of these people that are still operating on the conventional wisdom, especially when it comes to software. And that is that it's like, oh, well, we're in the saturation phase now, so I definitely can't do anything now. I have to wait until we're in the equilibrium. And I think I'm not going to say that it's a mistake, but I think that there are unforeseen costs in this industry, in this situation specifically, that were the costs that were not present before. And what I mean by that is that the reason why this situation is different is because, though we have reached the point of saturation with AI to where there's a lot of noise, we haven't reached the top of the potential yet either. Usually with these other emerging technologies, whenever you reach the point of saturation, it's like, well, they stop coming up with new possibilities for the realistic possibility. You know, the breakthroughs stop happening, you know, or they start slowing down considerably. And it's just like the noise catches up and begins to outweigh the actual technological breakthroughs. What's interesting about AI is that the saturation is happening, the noise is happening, but the breakthroughs are still right there. The breakthroughs are still growing in tandem. And to my knowledge, we haven't seen that before. Where it's like each new day, you know, I hear someone use the term AI incorrectly, but also each new day, I see a new paper come out where somebody does make a novel discovery, a big deal. You know what I mean? And so it's like the growth is still happening despite the fact that the hype train is rolling. And that's why the situation is different, for one. And now the costs associated with that, because you might say, okay, well, that's why it's different, but why are there costs? The costs are that the very nature of artificial intelligence is that it learns on its own, right? Which means it increasingly gets better over time. So when you talk about these large Fortune 500 companies or these government agencies or whatnot, these are people that have razor thin leads relative to their opponents if they are in any sort of competition, right? They've very at the highest level, it's a game of inches, right? And so if you're talking about something that gets better over time, if you have somebody, if you have a competitor that adopts one of these solutions before you do, because you were wanting to wait for the hype to die down. It's like, well, the hype's not going to die down because of the fact that the breakthroughs keep happening. The hype's going to keep growing with it, right? So if you have a competitor adopt one of these solutions before you, you have given them the head start to where, if let's say you give an AI the same amount of information and you know the same business structure, the same workflows, all of that, but one of the AIs got started a year earlier. Well, now it's got that head start forever. Now it's, you know, because it gets better over time, right? So by the time that you integrated that solution, it, all else equal, that time variable is going to make your competitors, you know, AI just a wee bit better. You know, it's a very small razor thin difference, but at the highest level, that you know what I mean, that multiplies out into like these huge ripples. So that's what I would say to business leaders, is that this is different. It should be taken seriously that it's different. And you shouldn't wait for, I'm not going to say you shouldn't wait for to jump right in and purchase a solution. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that you shouldn't wait to educate yourself. You should start educating yourself right now. Because if you're waiting for the hype to die down and for the public consensus to arrive, and then you can kind of operate off that public consensus, you're going to fall behind. That's my perspective, which again, you know, I'm just one guy, but that's my perspective as somebody that works in this industry.
I love it, and I can't agree more with you. And is obviously things are moving so fast, and you're spot on. And whoever is on the fence and it's not already leveraging, regulating internally with their organization is going to affect also their clients' care and everything else externally as a result of it. And we know where competition is, where things are going, but really brings a closing point here. When we now look at, I'm just being overwhelmed and amazed and super excited. What are you doing with Doxy? Because obviously having conversation with you prior and telling me some of these highlights. So let's just quickly do a recap. Let's just do together this. So Doxy is leveraging insanely large amount of data and different types of documents in very short period of time. You mentioned 5 minutes, what will take for one person to leverage maybe or sign or read or process or whatever it might be. Doxy can do easily over 100,000 of those, correct?
Yes.
The other piece is Doxy has opportunity to read documents in multiple languages, guys, Spanish, French, Arabic. I mean, it's not limited to English only. Nobody is doing that right now. I vetted so many companies, and I can tell you this is a game changer. The third component I want to highlight, what I'm super stoked about, is we all know in modern time, I remember working in healthcare when we shifted from medical records to electronic records. What happened to those old medical records? A lot of those records are still somewhere kept. Some of them are being shredded, depending on regulation, states, or the country. But imagine gazillion of records that exist for centuries for every country, every archive that are proprietary, historic, and have tremendous value. Guess what? You guys can also read the handwritten messages, the notes, the books, the transcripts, you name it. I mean, that's mind-boggling to me. Yeah. And on top of all of that, you have the 99% precision and accuracy over every competitor that is existing right now. You have speed. And what is the third thing that you also have that I forgot?
We are not a platform. A lot of the legacy providers and the industry leaders right now, if you call them that, are platform providers, and that adds a lot of friction to the process of implementation, because it calls for people to, you know, migrate their operations onto a platform. Now you're giving a third party this leverage over your operations. Data security comes into question as well. Sometimes you have to change your operating procedures. Then you have to, you know, send out new training materials to employees on how to use this new piece of software. It's a lot. And, you know, from the platform provider's perspective, it's great for them. It's, you know, because it makes the client dependent on you. And so, you know, that's a very sticky source of revenue for them. I understand why they do it. But, you know, in the interest of serving the clients, what's better for the clients is to be able to go to them and say, hey, you don't have to change anything. We know that this technology is new and that you're already, unsure about how, if this is too good to be true, what's snake oil, what's not. It's like, we're not going to make you change anything. We're going to build on top of all of your existing infrastructure so that you don't have to worry about changing anything. You don't have to train employees on new pieces of software. We come in, take a white glove approach. We understand, like, what are you doing? Just tell us everything about what you're doing, and then we will mold Doxy to how it needs to be molded to fit within your operation. So for example, we have, one of our clients that's doing compliance paperwork, right? So they just need to process, they read these 50 to 100 page PDFs. They look for the same pieces of information that are just labeled or structured differently each time. And then they put them in a spreadsheet or they do whatever they do with them. And so for them, this is just an example, but they just drag it. They get those files on a flash drive and they just drag and drop those files into a hot folder on the desktop. The information is extracted, it's uploaded to the database, and then the document's stored, and then the next one's automatically processed. That whole process is automatic. That's like one method of deployment. And then another method of deployment, we have one of our clients is an insurance company. They get all their applications for coverage to a specific email inbox. And when those applications come in, there will be the body of the email, which can be written any number of ways. And then there will be documents attached to the email. So, they'll have, like, let's say it's someone looking for insurance on a business. They might have, an Excel sheet of the cap table, a PDF that contains their standard operating procedures, a Word document with the board bios of the people involved. A lot of different information. It's all over the place. It would typically take an underwriter about an hour to go through all of that information, extract what's meaningful, subject it to their internal business logic to calculate a quote for the prospect, and then send that quote, fill out the formal quote document, and then send that formal quote document back to the prospect. It'd take about an hour, hour and a half. Now, Doxy, we deployed it directly onto their email servers. So there's no, on this one, they don't even have to drag and drop. Doxy monitors the email inbox. It catches the new emails when they come in. It reads them to understand the context of what it is and what's being asked. It reads each of the supplementary documents. It extracts what's meaningful. It does that whole process and gets a quote back to the prospect in less than 3 minutes. And so that's an example of a fully automated end-to-end solution, where that's the difference between like a tool and a digital employee, is it's doing the whole process from end-to-end.
That is insane. And what I'm so excited for everybody, again, watching and listening, and thank you, Austin, for sharing that, because it's not limited to specific type of our documents. Could be book, could be contract, could be legal document, could be government document, could be also old document, but it's applicable across industry and across the whole departments. And this is going to, I think, help to break the silos, because right now, as you know, we're dealing with so much fragmentation, specifically Fortune 500 companies, with the silos among C-suite executives. So what one team is very focused on might necessarily be what the other one is, and how is this going to differentiate, but then also integrate and show quickly what's happening, and not only just from procurement side, but also from execution operation side, and understanding what cycle of the process you are, either as a contract or implementation of that contract. Wow.
Absolutely. Yeah. This is just the beginning. Because right now, just to, talk about some of the limitations, it's like right now we can do any document in any industry, in any language, but there's still the human component that is needed for me and my team to translate, from the client to Doxy. And that in and of itself is a lot of friction, which, don't get me wrong, we are spoiled as human beings are spoiled right now with that relative to where we were, a couple of decades ago. But it's like right now, for me, it's crazy thinking about the fact that soon you won't even need me and my team to use Doxy. Soon we will have it so advanced that, it'll be plug and play. You won't need us to onboard a new use case, a new workflow. It'll be able to onboard itself. Right now, the way I explain to people is Doxy is the most productive employee that you could possibly hire, but it is still a new employee and it needs that onboarding process. It needs you to help us with that onboarding process because we don't know your business. And soon we will be in a place where the system will understand the industry that it's going into, the part of the ecosystem within that industry that they're going into. It'll be able to dial in to exactly what department, who's using it, and intuit all of these, you know, nuanced things that, you know, we currently have to kind of pry out of people, it'll know all of that any, like, from the jump and be able to get started right away. And that's what I'm really excited for. I'm excited for the day that somebody comes to me and they say, I want 10 digital employees and I need them to start tomorrow because an important project just started and I can snap my fingers to make it happen. That's when I think the snowball effect is going to really take hold.
Thank you for listening to Legacy Leader Show. If you enjoyed the content and had a positive experience, then please leave us a positive rating. In addition, leave us a positive review whenever you are listening on whatever platform there might be. Make sure your friends and family also know about the benefit and value that we provide and what we have to offer. Cheers.